children. What are we gonna do to show we care? How are we gonna be there for our children when they feel that life has just not been that fair?
Good evening and welcome back to Mask's weekly radio show on Family Matters. Mask, Mothers and Fathers Aligned, Saving Kids, and our confidential number is 718-758-0400. Call our number anonymous. Maybe you want to write it down so you give it to a neighbor, a friend, a relative, someone you sit next to in shul. Again, our confidential number, 10 a.m. to 10 p.m., 718-758-0400. I hope everyone had a wonderful Shavuos Yom Tov, and getting ready for Memorial Day weekend. Happy to have with us today someone that has been working on a very, very painful, sensitive topic for the last 20 years, my colleague, one of my favorite colleagues, Debbie Fox, founder and director of Magen Yeladim and Safety Kit Program. I want to welcome you, Debbie. Thank you for coming on tonight.
Thank you, Rachama. I love doing anything where I can work together with you and Mask.
Thank you. Debbie has presented to over 70,000 different community people from Mexico, Canada, Israel, New York, everywhere around the United States, to schools, to school administrative administration, to the staff, to parents, and to children. And I'd like, Debbie, if you can please tell my listeners, what is Magen Yeladim and Safety Kit Program? Give us an understanding of what it is, when you started it, and who can reach out to you, please.
Thank you. Thank you. The program actually started close to, this particular program actually started close to about 13 years ago when here in Los Angeles there were a series of sexual abuse events in a very short period of time, within 6 months. And interestingly, I sat with the Rabbanim of Los Angeles at the time, and they people 13 years ago didn't understand sexual abuse to the degree it is today. And they were shocked. They really didn't know what to do with it, and they actually gave me the mission of creating a program to help prevent it. And those Rabbanim in Los Angeles actually have been involved, very involved, from the very beginning. That's how it began. And it kept growing and evolving. Our program, the Safety Kid program, is actually a program that's based on the National Center for Missing and Exploited Children. They actually were so thrilled to work with the FRUM community that they gave us a mentor. Their mentor spent a year with us. She provided our first training. She met with the Rabbanim. And our program is based on their program with their input. And it has been, it's a program that developed as we went along. So it has a children's program, a parents program, a staff program, and an administrative program, because our belief is it takes a community to keep every child safe. And we have to create a community, and the community is all the adults working together and understanding together and having the same language and being able to educate the kids as well.
You say language. I'd like to touch on the language part first. When a child approaches a parent, a teacher, a therapist, a mentor, we need the right language to respond immediately when they share that they have maybe been touched inappropriate, etc. So can we talk about the language part first, what that first response needs to be from someone that is, you know, on the end of being the receiver of such, you know, painful news. Sometimes if a child tells a parent, Debbie, that they've been molested and they were molested by a family member, by a rabbi, by a teacher, by a mentor, by someone that teaches their son maybe for their parsha, for their bar mitzvah. There are so many different places this could happen. A guest at home that comes every Shabbos to one's home and the parents go to sleep and possibly they have access to a child and molest them. Camp, what about camp? In camp, sleepaway camps, whether it's a day camp. Debbie, what do we respond with? What is that language that's so important, that first response?
Hama, thank you for asking that question, because that first response is so incredibly important. One of the recent statistics I've read that really struck me is that 70% of children who told their parents or their trusted adults and were not validated for having disclosed never told again. They never revealed their abuse again. And we can only imagine how that affected them for the rest of their lives, both the fact that they were abused and that their parents did not or were not able to listen or validate it. So that question is a critical question. So I want to just take a very short moment to talk about how come kids don't talk. Why don't they tell us? Wouldn't it make it easier for all of us if they just came and told us and then we could just deal with it immediately? But they don't talk. I'd say one of the reasons they don't talk is because we don't talk to them. We haven't opened up this conversation with them. We haven't had conversations talking about their body and that their bodies are private and no one's allowed to touch the private areas of their body. And we haven't had those open conversations. And therefore, they don't have a shared language. They don't think they can talk to us about it because they don't think we're comfortable talking to them. If we were comfortable talking to them, wouldn't we bring it up? So in that, if we don't initiate conversations with them, they're not going to feel safe initiating them with us. Also, like you said, in all of the examples you just gave, the person who abused them was someone known to them. 98% of sexual abuse occurs at the hands of someone known, loved, and respected by the child. It's very hard for them to talk about somebody who violated them that is known and loved by the family, a sibling, a family member, a rabbi, a counselor, any of those Shabbos guests, any of those, a grandparent, any of those it could be. It's very hard to talk about it when it could be a family member. It could be that they were, in most situations, they've been groomed by that person. So they may have a relationship with them that's been going on for a long time, and they may love the person and have been made to feel very special by the person. And it's very hard. They don't want to get that person into trouble now, in their mind. That's how a child sees it. So they're afraid to tell. They're afraid possibly they may have been threatened, that if they told, that this person would come back to hurt or kill their siblings or kill their parents. They may have been threatened. So there's so many reasons kids don't tell. The number one reason children don't tell is because they don't feel that they will be believed. So the number one thing a parent has to do is believe them. That's what we have to do. We have to believe them. So we have to understand a little bit about why they don't tell. When they do tell, the most important thing a parent can do is remain calm. because they fear that we parents can't handle it. It is so big in their mind that they feel it's going to be too big for a parent, too. So when a parent says, what? What are you talking about? He did what? When did he do that? A child's like,
or the response could be, what? That's not true. It's not even possible that they would do that to you. Why are you making it up?
How could you say that about him?
Right.
How could you even say that about him?
Or her.
Right? Or her. Right. So any of those responses let a child know, close that door. Close that door. They'll recant. They'll go away. But they won't open that conversation with you. So the most important thing I always tell parents, you become a receiver. If you need to be hysterical about it because it is a terrifying thing for a parent to hear, you do that with your husband or your wife later behind closed doors. You do not do it in front of the child. What the child needs to see is, I'm okay. I can tell my parent and they're going to take care of me. And be very gentle, letting them know that whatever they want to tell you, you can hear. You need to say, thank you for trusting me. Because they think they did the wrong thing by telling. They've been told not to tell. And remember that all children feel ashamed if someone's touched them. Most children feel at fault. You want to just reassure them, doing the right thing by telling me, thank you. And you want to listen, sorry they did that to you. So the child realizes that you are not blaming your child. You are not saying something like, I told you that if you left your buttons open like that on your shirt or you wore a shirt that tight, that something was going to happen. You never blame a child. A child is always a victim. They are never, your child, it's always the adult. The adult is always responsible. So you just stay with your child. You let them know that you're so sorry this was done to them. And then if you need to call someone or follow up or help them, you gently let them know what it is you need to do, who you need to call, and that you're going to get back to them and communicate with them. Your job is to make them feel secure, that you can handle it, that you're going to take care of them. That's what your job is as a parent, to listen.
And they feel safe. They need to feel safe.
Because more will come out later if you've made them feel safe.
Right. Right. And we do tell parents, the less you ask them about the details, the better, because you really want that done with the professional in the right way. So why is that important? We are taught that way.
It's important because if there ever is an investigation, you do not want the professionals to say that you led the child. So that's often, you don't want to be in a position of having led your child. You don't want to be in the position of saying, oh, you know, was it Rabbi so-and-so that did it? If you say that, you introduce it. You want them talking. Let them do the talking.
Very important. And with that message of having your child, your loved one, whoever it is, that will then need to sit with a professional and work through the trauma, this show is being co-sponsored by Interborough Developmental and Consultation Center. Interborough offers, they have therapists for all different kinds of mental health issues, including trauma, and they are located in Flatbush, 1623 Kings Highway, 718-375-1200, in Williamsburg, 790 Broadway, 718-388-5100. 1-7-5. In Canarsie, 9413 Flatlands Avenue, 718-272-1600. And in Crown Heights, 921 East New York Avenue, 718-778-0485. They really have us covered. Inspire is a wonderful outpatient clinic for all mental health issues. Call them if you have any questions, difficult time getting through, you want a firm therapist, call me at MASC. I have a wonderful staff, 10 a.m. to 10 p.m., 718-758-0400, and we will get you an appointment for yourself or your loved one, your friends, your neighbor, someone you sit next to in shul, that you may be able to help them heal from their trauma by calling in to borrow. Debbie, I'd like you to give out your number if somebody wants to call you, please.
Thank you. 323-424-4532.
And Debbie Fox is working with schools, administration, parents, children, staff, camp staff. And she travels around the world, Magen Yeladim and the Safety Kit program. Debbie, I want to touch on something that very often we get phone calls about, and that is when a parent says, but my child was only touched once. Why is my child acting out? They were touched when they were 7, when they were 5, when they were 14. Why one time are they now 15, 16, 17, 18, 29 and still suffering? What is it that my listeners need to understand about sexual abuse? What happens to that victim where they just struggle with so much pain and it could take years until they're able to begin their journey of healing?
Ruchama, that's such an important question, and it's so important for every parent to hear that, because there's so much that has gone into one time that a child has been touched. Remember what we said, 98% of the time, sexual abuse occurs at the hands of someone known, loved, and respected by that child. That means that their trust was violated. It's somebody in their life. So there's so many issues involved. It's the fact that it's someone they trusted and their family trusted, usually. And there's a violation. It's the fact that they've been touched inappropriately, and so often things are stimulated in them and woken up in them, feelings that are inappropriate for their age. They're not aware of feelings in those parts of their bodies that someone all of a sudden is talking about or someone is touching. There's so much more to it than just someone touching it. There's an experience of somebody either being forceful with them or grooming them. It's a totally violating experience to the child. And then it becomes locked in a secret. And that secret may even be with threat. And then, even to add to that, is the issue that they fear if they ever told anybody, nobody would believe them. All of that, the physical violation, the physical feelings, as well as the fact that it's a trusted family member or somebody trusted in their life, and the fact that they don't feel anybody would believe them, and maybe no one did believe them, it is violating to the child in every way. and it does deeply impact them, and it does deeply impact often if they don't get, if they get the appropriate help, the resilience of children is incredible. You just talked about Interborough and the services they offer. These children can benefit tremendously from getting the appropriate help by a trained mental health professional. But the children who are not able to disclose or do not get help, those children carry it, they carry it forever. And it may come out 10 years later or 12 years later with a tremendous amount of pain and anger. And it may come out in future relationships. And I think it is incredibly important that parents be aware that anytime a child discusses that anybody was inappropriate with them, listen, validate, and figure out what you need to do to get your child the help they need, as well as what do you need to do about that person who violated them.
Yeah, so anyone, you know, that goes through this, you know, it's such a difficult, painful time, and they need support. So for parents that are going through this with their loved ones, call MASC, try and set you up with mentors, therapists, support groups, so that you can get the support to take care of yourself and create a support system for yourself and have resources so that you can help yourself and help your family member. I do want to say that there is hope. You know, the future does, you know, there is hope. People, children exposed to trauma could recover. There is hope. But we need to remember that effective interventions have been developed to help these children learn to live with the memories of their trauma. And with the best interventions, if you get therapy for that person, the victim, immediately, then you can get guidance on how to help the victim go forward, have support. You know, a lot of them, Debbie, have a problem falling asleep at night. Mm-hmm. There are different, you want to talk about the different areas that are affected when faced with such trauma, please.
I just want to go back and just validate one thing you just said in reference to the importance of both getting the help, as you just said, going to those experts, and that children really are resilient, they really do heal, but also the importance of the family support. That when children feel believed and when children feel their parents are supporting them, that the resilience is even higher. The family support plays a very big role in their healing.
But parents and family need to first learn about what to do and, more importantly, what not to do.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Right. So you wanted me to address what a parent might see?
Yeah, let's do that quickly, please, okay, before we wrap.
Yeah. Okay, really quickly. One of the most important things a parent wants to look out for are any significant changes in a child's behavior. That's one of the most important things you may look at, especially, we're talking about, you mentioned camp for a moment earlier, especially when they come home from camp. Did they go to camp a really good kid, really involved, really rah-rah, you know, everything was, you know, very easygoing child, and come back highly anxious, very, you know, introverted, not wanting to go out, not wanting to play with friends, or extremely attached to, let's say, a counselor, not wanting to play with others. You see a real significant change in their behavior. That's
anger,
something to be concerned about.
Anger, irritability, mood swings.
Exactly. Anger, mood swings, you know, any of those types of behaviors or distinct changes, those are things for a parent to be aware of when you're going, what's going on? This is not a parent. So many parents have called me, and Ruhama, I'm sure you've heard the exact same words. This is not the child I sent to camp.
Yes. Yes.
Right?
Indeed.
If you have that feeling, you want your child assessed. Then you call MASC. You have that feeling, call MASC. What you discussed before, children who become afraid of going to sleep or have a lot of nightmares at night, you want to pay attention to that. Smaller children may regress. They may start to bed wet or wet themselves during the day. They may be very, very clingy, not want you to leave. They may be frightened of certain people. They may have a lot of anxiety. They may have fears, all of a sudden start developing fears that they've never had before, like maybe even fears of dogs or cats or things like that, but they've never had it before, and all of a sudden there's a lot of fear. So
very
developing
important.
New fears.
Yep.
Those are all things that parents, and especially a fear of a particular person. And if children ever express to parents a fear of a particular person, you shouldn't be pushing that child. Oh, come on. Go kiss your uncle. It doesn't matter. He's your uncle. Just go do it anyway. Or if a child says, I don't want to go to their house, I don't feel comfortable at their house, you need to hear them. Hear your child. Ask them why. Don't just push them. So we need to pay attention to that.
Yeah, Debbie, we want to continue this conversation. Our time is up, and we want to invite you to come back next week for part two. This evening's show is sponsored by Interborough Developmental and Consultation Center, 718-375-120. And Debbie, a number again, please.
323-424-4532.
And MASC, 718-758-0400, or go online to maskparents.org. I want to thank you again, Debbie, and hope to continue this conversation. And I want to wish everyone a wonderful evening and a beautiful Shabbos. Thank you. Good night.
KCN, Talk Line Communications Network Radio, America's number one Jewish program.
Did you ever consider hosting your own radio or television show? We can help you get on the air. Talkline Communications works with broadcasters as well as with TV and radio stations in New York and nationwide that lease time, all at competitive rates. We work with doctors, lawyers, and other professionals, as well as with ethnic broadcasters. For more information about hosting your own radio or TV show, please call 212-769-1925. 212-769-1925. And out of New York, call 1-866-MY-TV-SHOW. That's 1-866-MY-TV-SHOW.
Now you can explore Jewish history and heritage traveling the world's great waterways. Kosher River Cruises is the only all-kosher, all-inclusive, luxury five-star cruise featuring delicious glatt kosher cuisine by Chef Malcolm Green. Includes daily touring, education, lecture and entertainment programs, plus so much more. Join me, Zev Brenner, on the Danube, Budapest to Prague, commemorating the life of Simon Wiesenthal with the Simon Wiesenthal Center's Rabbi Marvin Hoyer, Rabbi Abraham Cooper, and Rabbi Meir May, and other board members, October 22nd, for 7 glorious days and nights.
Zev, I look forward to being with you and to listening to the programs that you're going to have right on board and from the ship. And we're going to have a wonderful 7 days together.
Zev, looking forward to your participation in making sure that the wonderful river cruise will also have a special contemporary meaning to it. Looking forward to some real quality time with you, the people who come on the cruise, and of course your listeners.
Other tours include to Vietnam, Cambodia, Brazil, Portugal, and Spain. Visit us at kosherrivercruise.com for more information and cruise details. That's kosherrivercruise.com. I look forward to sailing with you. That's kosherrivercruise.com.